You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to another episode of Solana Moms Building Community Podcast. Today, we're diving into an incredibly important topic that impacts every family: estate planning. Whether you have already started the process or it has been sitting on your to-do list for far too long, this episode is here to help you. We're thrilled to have Scott Reynolds, an experienced lawyer with over 100 years of combined team expertise, joining us. With his vast knowledge and decades of practice in estate planning, trusts, wills, and tax strategies, Scott will guide us through the essentials of estate planning and how it can bring peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Don't miss this valuable conversation. Let's get started. We have the amazing Scott Reynolds here. Thank you for being here, Scott.
My pleasure to be here with you today.
I'm very excited. I have a lot of questions to ask you. Estate planning and all these law stuff is very alienish to me. So I hope you make it simple to me and to my listeners. But before all that, I would like you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
I'm happy to do so. My name is Scott Reynolds. I've been an attorney practicing in estate planning for 48 years. Became a certified specialist about 34 years ago.
Wow.
I got into the practice of law as a result of my father. He was a physician, and all of my friends assumed that I would be a physician just like him and go into practice with him. But after 3 years of undergraduate school, I realized not a chance.
Oh, yeah.
So I sought for something else that would provide service to the community, service to my friends, families, and others. And the law came out number one in every aptitude test that I took. So,
wow,
got me started.
That's amazing. Are you the only kid?
No, I had two sisters.
Oh, really? But your dad probably expected you to be the doctor. Was he supportive when you told him?
He was supportive of me changing. Yes, absolutely. He was silent all the other years. It was all of his friends that said, "Oh, hey, Scott, we know you're going to grow up to be just like your dad and go to work with him, practice with him." So I just assumed that. He never, ever expected that. So when I told him that I was not going to be a physician, he actually was relieved.
Oh, wow. And did you realize when you told him that you don't want to be one, or did you know in high school that you didn't want to be a doctor, or was it after our experience of having those chemistry classes?
Yes, it was after taking 3 years of biology, chemistry, physics, and calculus, I said, no. Not for me. And he said, it's going to take 4 more years of that same class structure. And I said, okay, then good reason to get out of it.
Wow, I'm happy to hear a supportive dad, and you know, you're amazing. I actually, listeners, this is how I got to know Scott. I interviewed Beth Rowe, the financial advisor from Edward Jones, and she referred me to Scott. And then I went online to check about him. Oh my God, check his qualifications and how much he does for community. At that moment, I was like, I need to have him in my podcast, because I love when my hosts or guests in my podcast do a lot of community work. That inspires me and inspires the listeners. Scott, we're going to go into the questions. This episode, listeners, is about estate planning. My first question is, what are the most common misconceptions about estate planning, and how can we make it less overwhelming for families? Also, what is estate planning? Most people don't know it.
All right, let me just start out with the last statement that you made, that estate planning can be overwhelming, and that's very true. And it's true for a number of reasons. One, they don't understand what estate planning is, but there are a lot of misconceptions, or what I like to call mistakes, that are floating around out there. So estate planning includes a number of things. It includes a will, a trust, a power of attorney, a healthcare directive, and a HIPAA or medical authorization release. And it can be any one of those five or six documents can consist of an estate plan, depending on the need of a particular client, the size of their estate, whether they have children, whether they have a blended or mixed family. All of those will go into determining what of those elements constitutes an estate plan for them.
Okay, so if someone, let's just say like myself, say I need estate planning, I have no clue about it, I call you.
Okay.
What do you tell me? And what steps do I have to take to do those requirements?
Okay, the first thing that we're going to ask you to do is to fill out a questionnaire.
Okay.
And send it back to get some information. So we would find out that you have two children. We'd find out a little bit about the assets that you own. Do you have a house? Do you have a bank account, a brokerage account, retirement account? All of those things, because those weigh in on our recommendation to you.
Okay. So is it age-based? Because sometimes when I hear, when we talk to people about estate planning, they say, well, I'm too young, I don't need to do this. Even I say, oh, should I do it? So when is it the right time to do it? And what age is too early, what age is too late?
Very good question, and I've had to educate my own children, because they obviously get estate planning for free, but to get them to do something has been difficult, just like you
yes,
said.
Yes, yes.
I said, we're too young, we don't need it.
Yes, and also how much investment do I have to put in and all that?
So what I explained to each of them was, once you become 18, you at least should have a durable power of attorney for financial affairs and a healthcare directive. Because what happens if you're 19 or 20 years old and you become incapacitated? Your parents can't just step in and take care of your financial affairs. You need to have someone appointed via a durable power of attorney.
And how do you get that?
You get that through an attorney. You can also go online, and I can talk about that a little bit later. I don't like going online and using a statutory form or a prepared form, but that's one way you get a power of attorney. Same thing with a healthcare directive. Again, 19, 20 years old, and you're in an automobile accident, you're in the hospital, you can't give informed consent to the physician. Who's going to make decisions for you? Your parents aren't automatically going to be able to do that. So you need to appoint your parents, or maybe you have a better relationship with an older sibling that would be able to make that decision. So at 18, 19, 20 years old, at least get a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. And then the rest of your question is, when financially, once you start acquiring an estate, let's say 10,000, 50,000, maybe not necessary, especially if you don't have kids, you get up to over $100,000, then it starts to become important to maybe add a will to it.
Okay.
A will which would then say, okay, upon my death, I want everything to go to my parents, or I want everything to go to my siblings. But then the real magic number is $184,500. Why is that a magic number?
Yeah, it sounds random.
It does. Well, leave it to our legislature in Sacramento to make a random
decision. I'm going next week there, so
okay.
Maybe I'll
talk
ask.
To them for me.
Okay.
But One of the primary goals, from my perspective, in estate planning is to avoid probate. Probate is a big, bad, ugly word in my dictionary because it's expensive, it's time consuming, and everything's a matter of public record. And if you can avoid probate, wonderful.
What do you mean by probate? For someone, okay. I have actually read this, but I don't even know it in detail.
Okay. Take you for example. If you were single, you pass away, and you have assets. You have a house, you have a bank account, whatever else it might be. Who is going to transfer that to you? Just take a deed to a house. Who's going to be able to sign a deed transferring your house to a new buyer or to a relative or whoever it might be? You have to have someone do that. So the probate process appoints an executor.
And this is by the government they do it or state?
If you have no will in place, then the statutory law says, okay, the person who will serve as your executor will be spouse. If you have no spouse, then children. If you have no children, then parents. And okay. If no parents, then they look to brothers and sisters. And if not, then yes, the court will appoint someone for you. So you don't want the court making those decisions
for
you.
Oh, no.
All right. So that's one of the reasons to have the will is you get to choose who is going to be the executor and who's going to administer your estate. But more importantly, going back to that deed, that executor will eventually be able to sign a grant deed transferring the property to the buyer or to the appropriate beneficiary. So
okay.
That's why we want a will in that case.
What is the difference between a will and a trust? Because I hear both of them in one sentence most of the time, and I'm like, what is what?
Yeah, you'll hear, you need a will or you trust.
Yes.
Well, in all my years of doing this, I have drafted one will.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes. All the rest of them are trusts, and here's why. Once you get up over that $184,500, that magic number,
yes,
you are subject to probate unless you have trust.
Okay.
Okay. So a lot of clients will say, a good example during COVID, hey, Scott, I've got a $500,000 house, but I owe $600,000 on it. You know, because of the market crash, everything was upside
okay.
down. So they say, I don't need to worry about probate because I'm upside down. I have zero net worth. Well, probate is based on gross value, not on net. So that person still had a $500,000 probate, which would have triggered probate fees in the neighborhood of $10,000.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that we want to avoid. So the difference between a trust and a will, everything that's subject to a will is still subject to probate. All the will does is say, on my death, this is my executor, and on my death, these are my beneficiaries. With a trust, it says the same thing. Here is my successor trustee, and here are my beneficiaries. The difference is we've removed probate from the equation.
Okay, in the trust, right?
Correct.
Got it.
And the easiest way for my clients to understand the cost benefit, if you have $1 million estate, which is not hard to reach these days
yes.
with real estate,
yes.
especially when you're talking gross values, probate fees on $1 million estate will be $23,000. The fees are fixed by statute. And so that's what attorneys get paid, that's what the court awards. That same $1 million trust might incur $5,000 in trust administration fees. Huge difference. You as the decedent, you don't benefit from that savings, but certainly your beneficiaries do. There's an $18,000 savings in that hypothetical. But otherwise, the administration process is the same. You marshal the assets, you figure out everything that was the decedent owned, figure out all the liabilities, you pay off the liabilities, file all the tax returns, and then you distribute to the beneficiaries.
Got it. And in these trusts or will, you put all your assets, do you put what you owe to your debt? What do you put in this will? I want to make sure that the listeners know what they have to, you know, write in this will, and the beneficiaries. How do you choose them? And when you choose them, do they need to come to you sign? How does the whole process go? Because I want to know step by step.
Okay.
Sorry if I'm asking too many.
No, not at all. With a will, we don't transfer any assets or change or transfer assets into the will itself. Everything stays the same. So if you're a single person, it stays in your name. Husband and wife, it stays in your joint names.
Okay.
With the trust, we actually transfer the title. So again, a grant deed is the best example. I'll use my wife and I. So with respect to our house, Scott and Kathy transferred it to Scott and Kathy as trustees of the family trust.
Okay.
And the same thing with our bank accounts, our brokerage accounts. Those are all titled in our names as trustees. So what that means is any asset that is titled in the name of the trust is not subject to probate. Now, if we goof and there's an asset out there that is not in the trust, then
yes,
we will go through probate, but only with respect to that one, not one asset, not all of them.
Okay.
So that, I think that's the best way to distinguish between a will and a trust. There's no transfer going into a will, but there is. So that's one of the reasons why we send out a questionnaire to get everybody started, so that we find out what assets they have and what we need to assist them in transferring.
Got it. And then with the beneficiaries, what do you do?
Beneficiaries, yes. The beneficiaries are typically children. If no children, it can be nieces, nephews, brothers, sisters, or parents. The question for all of my clients is, when do you want the beneficiaries to receive their inheritance? So for example, let's just say you've got a $1 million estate and you've got a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old and you're contemplating your passing. Do you want those two children at that age to receive $500,000 each outright, free of trust, ready to do what they want with it?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The answer, 99 times out of 100, is absolutely not.
Yes.
So you can hold it back through a custodial account, or you can put it into a trust. When I first started practicing, we thought kids would be mature by 21, maybe 25. No. My clients would come back after their kids reached those ages and said, not a chance do I want them to inherit a dime outright.
I agree. I mean, I saw them myself. I think maybe 25 was the age where I felt like, okay, I need to get my stuff together.
Exactly. So instead of leaving it outright or letting them have it at age 18 in a custodial account, clients set up trusts. So it says that I give to Jessica in trust X number of dollars for her for a period of time or for life. So you might state, and this is what many of the clients have done, they'll say, all right, at 25, you get maybe 25% of it. At 30, you get another 25% of it. And at 35, you get the balance. What's the rationale for that? Well, at 25, in our hypothetical, you're gonna have 125,000 out of the 500. My experience has been, they blow it, okay? Well, all right, 5 years later, here comes another 125. Hopefully they've learned.
Yes.
And then here comes the balance of it. The biggest chunk comes at 35. If they haven't learned by then, they're never going to. You've done the best you can. You say, hey, good luck, kids. Here's the money.
I fully agree. Right. I mean, 35 is, I think, the magic number. If you don't learn by then it's out of your hand.
Right. And then the other option, too, is a lifetime trust. And that usually depends on the size of the estate that you're leaving to your children. In some estates, let's just say it's $1 million per child that you're leaving. And you leave the $1 million in trust for life. So what does that mean for that child? What it means is the child's going to get all the income. So if it's earning 5%, it's an easy number to work with. That's $50,000 a year. So there's an annuity payment, in a sense, to that child every year for the rest of his or her life. If that's not sufficient, if they need it for a down payment for a house, they have a major medical expense, then principal can be invaded and used for their benefit. If not, it stays there and then it skips a generation and passes down to their children, which would be the parents' grandchildren.
I see.
So again, in circumstances, that makes sense. I've got some very wealthy clients that say enough is enough.
Yes.
I'm giving them enough now. I don't want to give them more, or I don't want them to become what we call trust fund babies.
Yes.
Trust fund baby has no incentive to work.
Yes.
No incentive to do anything except, as we said, say, sit on the couch, eat potato chips.
Actually, that's what not that my son is. Sometimes I always tell the 9-year-old, please don't become a couch potato.
And that's it. Right.
Yeah, and he asked me, what is a couch potato? So it was really hard for me to explain. He thought you turn into a potato. I mean, he's 9-year-old.
Sure.
Yes, I said, no, you just are useless, basically. Yes.
Exactly. So those are some of the things that we take into consideration when creating trusts for the kids. Another example too, and hopefully it doesn't apply to many of our clients, but what if you have a child that is on drugs or an alcoholic or maybe even worse, incarcerated?
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to create a lifetime trust definitely for them. And maybe what you do is you condition them becoming drug-free, alcohol-free, getting out of jail and being on the right path before you make any distributions. Or if it is drug or alcohol, you say the money's there for you to go into a rehab facility. You
Good.
Don't give it to them outright.
I agree.
And there are special needs kids.
I'm glad there's something like that, because you never know with your kids what life
no,
they choose. And it's good to choose that. If they choose the wrong way, at least you are not, I guess, funding it.
Right, right. And special needs. One of my daughters is a special needs child. And we learned the hard way, not that it wasn't too much of a cost, but we gave her a checking account when she was an adult, early adult age, and we put money in there. $3,000 was just back then to start with. And all of a sudden I start getting her bank statements to show that she was bouncing checks.
Yes.
And so I said, Stephanie, why are you bouncing checks? What's happening? She says, well, I've got all these checks, Dad, in my checkbook. So I assume that I've still got money.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, and they give you the checkbooks. It's big. So
yeah.
She's like, wow, Dad,
oh, yeah.
Give me lots of money. Yes.
So we fixed that. In my trust for her, again, it's a little different than a lifetime trust, but it does address her special needs and address the fact that she's getting governmental benefits and that we don't want to destroy or have those governmental benefits.
Yeah, that's this is so nice that you're informing our listeners. I just actually had interviewed Krista Poe. She's Team Vacaville founder for special needs.
Right.
So any parents with special needs, if you have questions regarding trust or will or how to help your child when you're gone, please call Ryan Reynolds. He is amazing. As you see, he's explaining these things that I had no idea that existed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that comes from years and years of experience. Plus, personal experience always helps.
Exactly. And I think that's the touch. When you have the personal experience, you want to make sure to help the other person that doesn't know what you went through. So I'm glad you explained your story with your daughter. Now listeners could relate to that.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard to express your personal life with people, but thank you for doing that.
I hear an awful lot sitting across the table from clients, and I need that. I want to have just a very casual conversation to get to know them. And hopefully I find out about a special needs or an alcoholic so that I can address that with them and help them properly plan for the future.
That's amazing. I'm going to go to the next questions because the time is getting there.
Okay.
What are some tools or strategies that can help families minimize stress and potential conflict after a loved one has passed away?
The first recommendation is understand well in advance what the misconceptions are and the myths, not only as to estate planning itself, but what happens after death as far as the trust administration process. And that's one thing I didn't mention to you earlier, but I also give presentations on trust administration, or what happens after death. You'll get a kick out of this. I first called it Trust Administration for Dummies. You know, because there are all those books out there.
Okay? Yes, I have seen those.
So I was following up on that trend, and then one of my listeners said, we're offended by the term dummies.
Yes.
So I changed it to Trust Administration for Rookies.
Oh, I like that. Yes. I wouldn't get offended, though. I mean, sometimes I feel like dummies is just a word.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
But anyway, if one person's going to be offended by it, then I want to make sure that no one else is either.
Of course.
So, again, understanding the myths and misconceptions to start with, and understanding the trust administration process. And more as my clients age, they're starting to ask that question, well, what happens when we die? What's it going to look like?
Yes.
And they actually bring in their children.
Yes.
So they'll bring them in and let their children, assuming they're adults, listen to the process and answer their own questions.
That's great to involve them before something happens. Don't wait till it happens.
Right. And then the biggest issue or biggest concern I have is putting your beneficiaries, your children, in a risky situation. And that usually has to do with who is going to be your successor trustee or executor, and what is that going to do to the family dynamics. Going back to when I first started practicing, the common thinking was, we're always going to have our children, when they're old enough, be trustees. Or if not, we're going to have our brothers and our sisters be trustees. Over the years, I've seen a huge change in what the clients want to see, because they've now survived a generation. So for example, their parents said to the clients, you will be the trustee. And it often destroys family relationships.
Yeah.
Death and money do real strange things to family relationships. And they can be, I'll have clients say, Scott, don't worry about it. My kids get along just fine. And then death occurs and I'm going,
It's not fine.
It's not.
Yes.
It is not.
Yes.
So that's the one thing that I counsel my clients, is be sure to keep them out of that position.
I agree.
Many other alternatives.
Actually, we had posted your picture that on our website where we said we're going to interview you and we wanted our listeners to ask questions. One person had asked, what would you do with a blended family?
Bingo.
Yes. Okay. And I don't have the answer, so you're going to answer them.
I have the answer. One of the questions that I will ask a husband and wife when they come in is there a blended family, or is there a reason to create two separate trusts on death? That used to be very standard. You always created what we referred to as an AB trust,
okay,
or a survivor trust, credit trust. So the first to die assets go into a credit trust or a bypass trust. What does that mean? That then becomes an irrevocable trust. It provides for all of the income to go to the surviving spouse, so the surviving spouse doesn't have any loss of earnings income. Okay? But what it also says is that the surviving spouse cannot change the beneficiaries, that upon the surviving spouse's death, it all goes to the first to die's children. So mm-hmm. In a blended family, if you don't feel like you can treat them equally, and let's just say the first to die has three children. So the beneficiaries of that bypass or credit trust are the three children. The survivor who has two children has only his or her children as her beneficiary. So that way you can ensure that the first to die's children get their share of what mom or dad acquired during the lifetime.
Okay, well, that was informative.
So that's a threshold question. If it's the same marriage, same kids, it's a long-term marriage, then we usually don't create the split.
Okay.
It's not necessary. And just historically, too, we created the split for another reason, and that was estate tax exemption. And we haven't really talked about that, but back in the day, when I first started practicing, the exemption was $600,000. So it meant you could leave $600,000, your husband could leave $600,000, or a total of $1.2 million to your children without any estate tax.
Wow.
The drawback to that was if your husband died first, and he left everything to you, his exemption was lost. So you only had $600,000 when you died. So we had to create this fictional trust, not fictional, but this separate trust that was not you. And therefore, we applied his exemption to his trust. And so you actually got to exempt $1,000,002. Well, today the exemption, as of January 1st of this year, is $13,990,000 per person.
Wow, okay? How did that happen?
Yes, Congress has changed. The estate tax raises so very, very little money in the overall federal budget, it makes no sense for the smaller people, state-wise, to be taxed to death.
Yes.
Because the tax rate's 40%.
Yep.
Okay? So it's just been increasing each and every year. It's tied to inflation. So
between
you and your husband, you could leave $28 million to your two sons.
Wow.
Wow. So a lot of people don't reach that threshold, so we don't need to create this two-trust system for estate tax purposes. It's only usually in the blended family situation that we create this trust, this split.
Okay, I understand. For the next question I have is, for parents with young children, how can estate plan ensure that their children are cared for, which we talked a little bit, for an event that's unexpected?
Well, there are two issues, too. If they're under 18, guardians. And that's always a big issue with clients that have minor children. Who do they appoint? So it's a very, very difficult decision
Yes.
for many of them, picking the right person. And I have clients that will come in and say, well, I want mom and dad.
But
okay?
They're older, so.
They're older. And then I'll always pose the question, if they give a husband and wife, I'll say, all right, what if dad dies first? Are you okay with just mom doing it? Oh, sure. What if mom dies first? Are you okay with dad doing it? Oh, no, not a chance. So again, it's understanding if you list two and one dies, you're stuck with the other.
The other one.
So don't think that you have to name them both just to keep them happy. Name the mom in that case, or if it's a sister and her husband. If you're not after the husband, then name just the sister. And then also you can provide instructions to that guardian if they're to be brought up in a private school or a Catholic school or whatever else it might be. You can provide those instructions. So that's important on the guardian side. And then the other is, as you said, we've discussed to some degree, make sure that your estate is going to be distributed to them in a manner and form that will not adversely affect
Yes.
their life. And another benefit to these trusts that I didn't mention, they're asset protection trusts from creditors, which we all understand, but also predators.
Yes.
Okay? That's a predator, for all of you listeners, is a spouse.
I didn't know that.
I shouldn't say always a spouse, but there are predators, especially I see it.
Well, you have seen it in your experience, so
Yes.
that's what you're talking about. We are not in this field. That's why I didn't know.
Okay.
So you have seen it.
Right. And that's because the property that you leave your children, you want it to be their sole and separate property for them to deal with and dispose of as they wish. I have seen too many times, and had it with a very, very dear friend of mine, where the wife kept hounding him because he had a lot of money they inherited. Mm-hmm. To put it in both of their names. Said, if you really love me, you'll put it in both of our
names. Something love is money.
Right. And after several years, he finally did it. 6 months later, she filed for divorce. And she got half of everything. So that's an extreme
Yeah.
example.
Wow.
But that's one that I use with my clients. I say, that in its worst
case. Yeah, you have to be careful. I mean, nowadays we live in a world you don't know what's expected. So it's best to be safe and informed about it.
Right.
Well, good to know. That story is going to sit with me every time I think of that. It's going to be you.
Okay.
The other question I have is, as we talked before we started the podcast, there's a lot of people that are hesitant about doing wills, estate planning, and trust, because, like I said, it's also a scary thing to think of going to the lawyer, do all these paperwork, get beneficiaries, and at the same time, it worries you, am I going to die, or what's going to happen? What advice would you give to someone that's hesitant about doing all this?
It's easy to say, more difficult to quantify, but weigh the cost of not doing anything versus the cost and maybe some discomfort in doing so now. You just never know when life is going to be cut short for a husband or for a wife or another family member, and not having planned is very expensive, looking at a probate or other costs. So that's the best advice that I can give you, is truly understand that. And not all attorneys are scary.
Yes.
I don't think of myself you're not as being scary.
Yeah, actually I was today, because I've never met you before. Right. When you walked in, I'm like, what am I expecting? Am I signing my life away? Although I'm just doing a podcast where I'm informing our listeners on estate planning, because in my experience with the loss of my brother and my dad, unexpected things can happen. It's best to be prepared, and this is very important to do your estate planning and be prepared if the worst happens.
It is, and we prepare clients by sending out a questionnaire, as I mentioned. We send it out and ask for some financial information, but also to get them thinking, when do I want my children to receive their inheritance? Who should be my agent for healthcare purposes? Who should be my successor trustee? And then they come in, and usually they'll talk with me, make a decision, and we'll move forward. But some clients just like to come in and get to know me like you have today and find out that I'm not a grumpy old man.
Not at all.
And they don't want to proceed. But that's a great time just to find out more about what the process is, what it's going to cost, and how long it's going to take. And hey, can we come back and change things later on down the road? Absolutely. Because every document that we draft as a part of the estate plan, as I listed in the very beginning, can be modified, terminated.
Can it be yearly or is it any time?
Any time.
Wow, that's great.
Right. So one of the things that we offer to our clients when they come in, once they're a client of this firm, they have the right to come back and see me every year at no charge.
Wow.
For a free checkup, as I like to say. Now, if we make some changes, there'll be a nominal charge. But I learned that early in my career, is that clients would not come see me because they didn't want to get charged again.
Yes.
Okay? And there have been major changes in their life that they needed to let me know so we could make changes. And then they go on, and then it's too late. So I said, you know what? It's worth it. Come on in. We'll talk about it. And sometimes it does not require any changes. They just need to understand the implications of what happened. But sometimes it does.
Yeah, which is great. It saves more headache for down the road.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And one of the big questions I always ask on these annual reviews is, everything that you own in the trust? And some will say, well, no, I never got the bank accounts or the brokerage account in the trust. I say, well, then what good's the trust going to do you? You're going to go through probate because of your failure to do that. So it's always a reminder to make sure that the trust is properly funded so that it accomplishes what it was intended to.
That's great. And then what community projects do you do? What are you involved with, so the listeners know? I know you're part of Rotary.
Yes.
What else? And how could our listeners get involved with the community services that you do?
Well, yes, you're right. I'm in Rotary. I've been in Rotary since 1982, past president of two clubs. I'm very, very passionate about Rotary. I'm also on the board of directors of the Opportunity House, which supports the Festival of Trees, which just happened after Thanksgiving. And that's easy to get involved in. I've been on the Chamber of Commerce here for 6 years, the one in Fairfield for 6 years. I'm also on the Solano Economic Development Corporation Board of Directors, and I'm also on North Bay Health Foundation Board of Directors.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So I believe, as you do, in giving back to the community. The community has been so good to me over all these years, that I want to give back in some way. And all of these provide a service.
Yeah, that's admirable what you do.
So getting involved is simply a matter of going on the website for any of these organizations and saying, hey, I want to get involved. How do I do it?
Well, there you go, listeners. You heard Scott. And Scott, before I let you go, what other services does your law firm have, so the listeners know, besides estate planning, what else can you help them with?
Well, thank you for asking.
Of course.
First, I spend half of my time on business-related matters.
Okay.
I've been recognized by Super Lawyers as one of the top 5% business attorneys in Northern California.
So, I did see that, and
well,
I put
you.
Super Lawyer for you.
Okay,
when
thank
yes.
You. So that means that I help clients set up corporations, LLCs, limited partnerships. I help with the drafting of documents, review of contracts, things of that nature. I have two other attorneys that do similar work. One is a real specialist in taxation. The other one helps in mergers and acquisitions. I have three litigation attorneys that handle everything from civil litigation to the unfortunate occurrences when we have trust administration or probate litigation when the beneficiaries start fighting. Mm-hmm. I also have a bankruptcy attorney. Hopefully nobody out there needs a bankruptcy attorney.
But if you do,
right.
Here you are.
Right.
Yes. Exactly. I always say with any of my podcast interviewers, it's best to be informed. And when you are giving your resources to the listeners, they're getting informed. Even if you're going through bankruptcy or any other thing, Scott can help you. And when you have the right tools and the right strategy, it can save you headache from down the road.
That's a good point. And also for your listeners too, call me, and I don't have the expertise within the firm, I will refer you to somebody. I won't say, hey, just go find somebody who's a copyright or a trademark attorney. I won't do that. I will send you to someone that I've been working with for many, many years that I have confidence in and can make that introduction so that you don't go through the yellow page. Well, nobody uses yellow pages anymore,
but yes.
Through the internet to try and find out who might be the best for their problem.
Yes, that's amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Scott. Listeners, if you have any questions for Scott, please contact him at Reynolds Law, and we will also put all his resources on our Instagram page. Till next time, goodbye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.